$1.85 billion in military aid for Ukraine, including a Patriot missile system. Ukrainian officials have continuously called on the U.S. to deliver that system. Biden said the U.S. and Ukraine would continue to project a, quote, united defense against Russia as the war drags on. And as expected, the visit has drawn an angry response from Russia. Moscow's envoy to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, has denounced the visit as a, quote, Hollywood-style trip, accusing Washington of throwing all of its colossal resources, weapons, and intelligence capabilities at Kiev. The Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, has said that there had been no signs of readiness for peace talks during Zelensky's visit. He further noted that this was evidence that the U.S. was fighting a proxy war with Russia, quote, to the last Ukrainian. The Pentagon has disclosed that the U.S. has sent $20 billion worth of military aid to Ukraine in 2022. The recent $1.7 trillion federal spending bill includes $45 billion that's earmarked for Ukraine in 2023. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu noted earlier that Kiev had already received more than $97 billion worth of weapons and ammunition, and that Russia was already fighting the entire West and NATO. As the West, spearheaded by the U.S., continues to pour more military and economic aid packages to Ukraine, there are now calls for more transparency. In the U.S., Republicans are calling for plans to exercise oversight powers to scrutinize tens of billions of dollars that the U.S. has spent. Republicans have been more skeptical than their Democratic counterparts in the Senate about funding Ukraine's defenses. Some Republicans have cited corruption in Ukraine, saying that there are concerns about the aid going to the country. Prior to the Ukrainian president's remarks, a few Republicans had already made public their opposition to the spending bill and further aid to Ukraine. We should be focused on trying to contain the war, not expand the war. And this sends the message that we are kind of okay with expanding the war. And I think we should be sending a different message, is what Warren Davidson, a Republican congressman, has said. Another Republican congressman, Matthew Gaetz, has criticized Zelensky, saying that American politicians who indulge his requests are unwilling to put Ukraine first.
You've got Americans here at home that are demanding accountability on our southwest border. You've got crime rampant. You've got historic inflation. You have a litany of issues that we all are paying for at the behest of this administration. And no one can tell us where this money is going. My heart breaks for the Ukrainians, absolutely. But every American deserves to know where every single dollar has gone.
This comes amid a declining support of Republican voters for more military aid to Ukraine. In the latest poll, 33% of Republicans agreed with prolonged support compared to 61% of Democrats and 46% of independents.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله إلا الله الله يا الله والله أكبر.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. The Islamic government is a government of law. The person who governs should have a wide knowledge of law as it is referred to in traditions. It is necessary for the ruler as well as everyone who take charge of a post or occupies a job to acquire such knowledge. The only difference is that the leader should be the most knowledgeable. Our infallible imams had just used this same point that the imam, the religious leader, has to have superiority over others to prove their imamate. Also, the queries that Shia scholars raise and criticize others fall within this very domain when they say the caliph did not know the answer to a question about the Islamic law, or he did a certain act which was against Islamic law, so he was not qualified for this office.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Mousavi, and in this program we try to have a profound reading of Imam Khomeini's precious words and speeches. Well, on the subject of ethics and the self, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, has this sentence claiming that in Islam, everything is a prelude to making true human beings. If this creature is left to itself, it will ruin and destroy the whole world. Well, this sentence is about self-training and self-development. A true man in Islam is constructive in the sense that he builds himself and the environment as well. His success in building his environment depends on his success in self-making and vice versa. In other words, his success in improving the environment of his life paves the way for his self-improvement. Self-training is so much vast in meaning that almost any type of action done for that purpose of creating a positive effect is deemed under this category. Putting the physical aspects of self-training aside, we can see that the spiritual aspects are of great significance as well. Knowledge and faith are the foods of the soul, and they nourish and develop it just as good and healthy food nourishes the human body. Well, let's have a break and soon we will be back.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi.
Welcome back to your audience. You're listening to Spring of the Truth. We're talking about self-training and self-development. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, in this sentence, is saying that if one doesn't work on his or her own morality and faith, there is no doubt that he or she will not only ruin their own lives, but also the society and even the whole world. As followers of the school of thought of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, we'd better to take advantage of these precious points and make use of them in our lives in order to reach the high moral rank of a proper Muslim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamati.
Islamati.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word, Quran.
His word.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon him.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, sisters and brothers. Welcome to your favorite program. This is Youth Station.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. From my end, this is Zainab. After a long time, back on Youth Station.
Yes, and I'm so happy. Of course, I'm so happy and pleased and super excited to have this episode with you.
Same here, as always.
Yes, as always.
Over excited, over energy with you.
Yes, exactly. So, Zainab, you know, as we grow older, we remember our childhood and our young age when we were at home. And then different behaviors, you know, we have some certain ideals in our brain. We think that, okay, if my parents didn't do this or they didn't do that, maybe things would have gone the other way. So you, of course, have those thoughts, right?
Since I think we're going to do backbiting of our parents today.
Exactly. Yes. I hope they're not listening. So now since you're a mother and you have been there in the shoes of parents, what are the things you have limited yourself to do or not to do because you thought that as a child, I didn't like my parents' behavior? Are there any special things you remember that you said, if I become a parent, I would never do, or I would definitely do? As for me, I could say that when I was a child and when I saw some special behaviors, I would have thought maybe if I become a mother, I would never do that to my children.
And what was that?
Well, my mother is too much fastidious about every single
auntie
decision.
I hope you're listening to this.
No, I'm so sure she would not listen, and that's why I'm saying that. She is too fastidious about every single decision she makes, you know? And me, as a child, seeing my mother, I would get all those impulses from her. And then that sort of being finicky is going to happen to come to me as a trait. You know what I mean?
So give me an example of one of our behaviors.
Like, for example, in making a special decision, we are going to buy a dress. Then she searches too much. We go for too much of window shopping for a single dress. It's a single dress and we're going to pick it and that's it. But then we go for too much of searching in order to find the best one. And the thing that happens is that we finally could not find the best one. Therefore, the girl that you're seeing in front of yourself is a fastidious girl.
You are trying to say that she's very choosy and
yes.
This is making
exactly
problems for Salah. Let's put it here.
She looks for perfect things in everything.
Yeah, I got it. Now, had she not been choosy, you would have again been accusing her tomorrow. Because when you grow up and now when you yourself are mother and you're choosing, you're being very choosy towards your child, you're picking the best dresses, you're picking best everything, and you're being very careful, this has best stuff and all. And then you would have realized, I wish my mother was choosy towards me, because see how much I'm
care. See, I get
this
the core of what
being
you
choosy,
say.
It shows her extreme care.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. And I do admit that no matter what our parents do, finally, there's a point at which we're going to claim that they should have been the other way.
Yeah, I understand what you're trying to say. But there have been also times with me when I felt like I would never be like this with my children. Because I just been a few days ago, I was talking to my mother on phone, and she was my younger sister, the youngest of all. She is some 14 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just screaming out there. Like, she was also talking to me, and she was talking to her, and she was telling her, if I find any misbehavior in you, in a sense, like, if I find, now you're in your teens, and if I find you have contacts with the people, with non-mahrams and all, then I know with you, then I am going to, I don't know, break your head, break your bones. And
yeah.
That's not the way you should behave with your teens, basically. And she has been like that with us as well. And we used to like, and you know, in your teens, it's very, very normal that you get acquainted with so many people.
Exactly,
you get to know people. But now there should be someone who would educate you how to deal with different relations. Not someone like, I'll break your bones if I see
it. Yeah, before we get a smash, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, welcome back, dear listeners. We are talking about parents and what
they
should have done. We're
actually backbiting about parents.
Yeah, which is very much nice and interesting. Well, Zainab was talking about a very important factor, which was about parents giving us enough of a space to tell them every single thing, you know?
Not behaving the way they should behave with teens, because mm-hmm. teens require special attention. They require time to listen, and they need a good listener, because they are very energetic, they're very rebellious, yeah. they're very angry. They're
very edgy.
Yeah, there's so many changes going on in their mm-hmm. body, their mentality, their outlook.
So, Zainab, would you be that way with your children? Because as for me, I would think it's very difficult.
I would at least not tell my son, or I don't have girl, because it's very hard with girl child, but I have a son, and I have two sons. And I would at least not behave with them the way that
violent way, domestic
because
violence.
I know that's very normal. That's very natural. That's going to happen. But I will at least educate him how to, you know, how you can choose your path. Mm-hmm. I can actually make him aware of Quranic teachings, so that he finds his way himself, rather than like putting a pressure on him, like rather than telling him, I'm going to just, if I see you doing this, I'm going to cut all the connection.
So you mean that we shouldn't be so hard on our children?
Yeah. Especially with our teens.
Especially with our teens. Yeah. What do you think about the viewpoint of parents? You know, when I ask, you know, my aunts, my, even my mother.
Whatever the parents do is all of concern.
Yeah,
it's
when I ask her...
But sometimes this concern becomes the enemy, because this makes a distance
exactly.
between a parent and a child.
Yeah.
Now, what is your aunt doing in between?
Yeah, I was saying, when I ask them about, okay, why don't you give your children enough of a space to tell you everything, to come and sit with you and chit-chat like friends, best friends. Yeah, and talk to you so easily and happily. They say, if we give them that space, then they would never respect us. Then they would feel
respect
at home so much, and then they would lose all the, you know, the borders that exist between us. In our relationships, I have a younger brother. Then when I consider my relationship to him and his relationship to my mother, then I understand the difference, you know? We are like friends, but the way he treats my mother is more of a mother. You know what I mean?
I got it. I got your point.
Yeah.
Well, I think all those things go back to... respect is something that's a form of, that's expression of love, basically.
Yeah.
So one should not be searching that, just putting pressure, and now I'm putting pressure on you so that you respect me. Yes, there's a gap of modesty you have to take care of. Like, you should not give your children so much space that they become so immodest and they start talking every small, minute, immodest thing with you. Because there's an age difference, there's a generation gap, there's so many things. So we got to take care of these things.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. I was going to mention something, but before that, I guess we'd better go for a short break and then see what happens with us. Yeah. Welcome back. This was A Moment of Inspiration, and we're back with the topic of our parents, and we usually see them faulty. Poor parents, whatever they do, they're going to be accused of the things they haven't done or the things they have done.
Because the selfish world always sees the bad parts. It never sees the good parts.
Yeah, now that's very
especially
tragic.
Especially when it comes to parents, they have killed themselves, literally, to make us reach a level. But when we grow older, we become so self-centered, selfish, and we forget every good deed they did.
Mm-hmm.
We don't forget normally, but we actually are very... Attention is not towards those things. So maybe that's the...
Well, now I have an opposite thing to say.
Yeah.
Not all parents are perfect parents. You know what I mean? They haven't done all their best for their children. Not all of the parents are considered... exactly the way you define them right now.
No,
you know
I disagree.
What I mean?
Every parent tries as
no,
the best.
No, Zainab, see, there are different people, many people actually, many examples in this world that they are suffering from different complexes.
No, we always have exceptions.
Yeah.
In every case, it's not just in parents, we always have exceptions. I know a news when I was reading, there was a mother who killed her son giving him, by poisoning him. So there are exceptions always.
Of
yes,
course.
But most of the time,
I'm saying these
parents,
are not...
Parents literally kill themselves.
Yeah, because you are a parent.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
that's
realized.
Because you are advocating them because you are a member of their club. Now, as a children,
I had never realized the importance of like how many efforts does it take that your child wants to go to school at 7:30 and how early you have to wake up because you're sleeping at night. You're the last one who's sleeping
exactly,
in the home.
Yeah.
And tomorrow morning, you are the first one who has to wake up before your son has to go to school. Why you're waking up?
Yeah.
You slept so
because
late.
Because you brought him into this world.
That's what. You have to pay the price.
Yes.
So I'm saying that I never realized that they would have been actually, you know, doing this with their sleep, with their resting
yeah.
time. They would have been sacrificing all the time until I woke up so early
yes.
for my son, ironing his clothes, making lunch, tiffins, everything ready for him, and then sending him. And then I realized how much efforts it takes. And then when he went into school and then he was starting,
yeah,
he started
I get
studying,
all what you say.
And I had to do homework with him. And I was like, as if I am studying in place of him, as if
yeah.
I just got admitted
as if it's
school.
You, the one who's
sacrificing. Sacrificing all your time, sacrificing
yeah.
all your energy. I cannot ignore all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't say.
So I understand. So see, good parents do whatever in their power to make their children happy. And I'm so sure that in the end, there are some ingratitude children who would think that their parents were not even doing the least for their happiness.
Yes, there's one more thing I would not do with
yeah.
my children. That is whatever the favor I will make for them, whatever the thing, whatever the responsibility I would do towards my children, I won't say to them that I wish you remember this tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point to mention. Yeah.
So many parents say...
So many parents do that. Remember, just remember, as if it's a competition.
As if you're doing this for remembering.
Yeah.
I know. I, as a parent, have actually went through this. I have realized
yeah.
how much it takes. And you are eager to say this. You urged, you know, there's some inner urge that tells you, tell
exactly,
this sentence. But
yeah.
this actually takes us away from something that's called as ikhlas or sincerity. So we have to be doing everything for the... like for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And for the love we have in our heart toward our children.
You know, when you do things with sincerity, you get back results very
yeah.
well without expecting. But
exactly.
don't tell them, I expect you to be doing much better. Then like doing all those efforts, doing all those sacrifices makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's very true. And there's actually another point that as a parent I would never do to my children.
What is that?
It is the fact that I'm not going to choose from their side. You know what I mean?
Yeah, subjects especially.
Yeah. Sometimes parents think that giving children too much of facilities and money is going to make them happy. Right?
Yeah.
But actually what they are seeking for is not money, and it cannot be bought with any sort of money or whatever price,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
It is affection, love, and things like this.
Talking to
nowadays,
them.
Many parents are working outside for too much of hours, and when they come home, they are just torn out. So they have no time for their children.
And even if they have this social media, is
yeah,
taking all that
even
time.
The worst.
Yeah.
yeah. So when they come home, it's time for
like
scrolling on their phone and doing extra things, and they would pay no attention for their children.
And the worst thing that I am doing, my parents never did, was again the same social media thing. I would I pick up phone. I would have definitely, my parents definitely dedicated that time for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. So this is also another flaw. We have to notice.
We have to talk someday about our own backbiting. We have
yes,
to
exactly.
So today we did the backbiting of our parents. All right, so if we have no time, then I would say goodbye to...
You have no
audience.
Other choice.
Yeah.
yeah.
But I would tell them, respect your parents, whatever they are.
Yeah, now double check from me as well. So thank you for staying with us for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah shower you with His blessings and protect you with His never-sleeping eyes.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and much of the Republican elite have been casting around for a way to derail Donald Trump's bid to be the 2024 Republican presidential nominee. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Sanon.com has covered this story and gives us more details. It's no secret that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and much of the Republican elite have been casting around for a way to derail Donald Trump's bid to be the 2024 Republican presidential nominee. It's a delicate operation, to be certain. Trump's allure to the GOP primary voting base isn't just that he triggers the liberals, but that he ruffles the feathers of the Republican establishment. It makes the deplorables feel powerful, watching people like Mitch McConnell and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy bow and scrape to the ludicrous reality TV host foisted on them by their own voters. So the strategy is always about trying to find some way to undermine Donald Trump without provoking him, to unload personal invective on Truth Social in retaliation. Some of the maneuvering is behind the scenes. As Greg Sargent of the Washington Post documented this week, Senate Republicans helped slip an electoral count reform bill into a larger spending bill. The covert move isn't just about circumventing Donald Trump's plan to steal the 2024 election, but to do so in a quiet and highly technical manner that will likely avoid his attention. But mostly, Trump's opponents in the Republican Party are trying to brand him a loser. After Trump-backed candidates took a bath in the 2022 midterms, they fell behind non-Trump Republicans by an average of 5 percentage points. A number of Republican pundits and politicians stepped forward to declare him an albatross around the party's neck. Mitch McConnell repeatedly shaded Donald Trump by saying someone like him is unlikely to win. What will Democrats do when Donald Trump isn't around to lose elections? Snarked the conservative Wall Street Journal editorial board. GOP voters should give up on the idea that Donald Trump is a winner, argued the editors of National Review. Hopeful Republicans, opinion editorials predicting Donald Trump has lost his luster, have become a cottage industry. We'll see, of course, but there's no doubt that bad press is getting to Donald Trump, who seems incapable of even leaving his house these days. The announcement of his presidential run was conducted from the safety of Mar-a-Lago bubble, but even then it was lackluster at best. As Heather Digby Parton noted at Sanon.com, the former president tends to wander aimlessly around at Mar-a-Lago, bored and lethargic, depending on his attendance to call around, to allies to ask them to deliver affirmations and cheer him up. He's even calling people who won their elections loser in his typical psychological projection. Calling Trump a criminal and a fascist may be accurate, but both trends tend to be assets for Donald Trump in the eyes of his base. But, the theory goes, if Donald Trump can be branded a loser, it will finally break the spell he has over his credulous base, which is why Republican leaders should fall on their hands and knees and thank House Democrats for finally, after years of court battles, releasing Donald Trump's tax returns from 2015 through to 2020. Not because they reveal that Trump is a massive tax cheat, which only makes the base love him more. What's great about the tax returns is that they show that President Trump is about as good at business as he is at medical science. Despite his years of dubious claims to be a billionaire, the tax returns actually show that he spent most of his presidency losing money, hand over fist. This is a guy who used to brag that he'd make money by running for president, after all. That Donald Trump is a uniquely terrible businessman was known long before this. Back in 2020, the New York Times successfully obtained years of tax records, mostly from his pre-presidential life. Even those who had long been skeptical that a guy who hawked ringtones was really a billionaire were astonished at how very, very bad he is in business. The Los Angeles Times has also covered the same story and gives us more details. As the 2022 midterm election wheezes to an end, the start of the 2024 campaign feels both uncharted and uncannily familiar. Donald Trump began his bid for a comeback, the first attempt by a former president since Herbert Hoover, as the apparent frontrunner for the Republican nomination, who nonetheless appears vulnerable to a serious primary challenge. The fundamental question facing the Republican Party during this long run-up to the next election is who truly is in control. The elected officials and opinion leaders who have shaped their party's agenda from the top, or the grassroots bloc of Donald Trump faithful who have ruled from below. The latter may have shrunk in numbers since the former president left office, but they still command outsized influence in GOP primaries, and there may be just enough of them to propel Donald Trump forward in a crowded field of competitors. Republicans face daunting scenarios, an ugly primary battle that could aggravate ideological tensions within the party, or an easy waltz to the nomination by a candidate under the cloud of multiple criminal charges, criminal investigations, and proven unpopularity with crucial voters such as women and independents. I don't believe that he is completely intractable from the Republican Party, said Mike Madrid, an anti-Trump GOP consultant. Mike Madrid added, "Here's what I do believe. I believe the Republicans have so swallowed the hook that when you rip it out, it will bring up all its guts and probably kill it." Republican elites have been here before, publicly breaking from Donald Trump after the predatory vulgarity of the leaked Access Hollywood tape, his equivocation in denouncing white supremacists in Charlottesville, and the 6th of January 2021 attack on the Capitol that was catalyzed by his false allegations of election fraud. But so long as Donald Trump was able to mobilize infrequent voters to back him on his endorsed candidates, his influence on the party was never in doubt. It may be different this time, though. In tones typically reserved for Donald Trump, media personalities are speaking reverently about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' 19-point romp to re-election. The party's strong performance in Florida's congressional races also enhances Ron DeSantis' reputation for carrying down-ballot candidates to victory. By contrast, top GOP figures have pointedly noted Republicans have struggled in three consecutive national elections since Donald Trump won the White House in 2016. If a political party can't stay committed to their central premise, which is winning elections, then what's the point, said David Kochel, a veteran Republican strategist. There is some evidence the GOP is ready to move on. In a recent NBC poll, 62% of Republicans said they considered themselves more a supporter of the Republican Party rather than that of Donald Trump. The largest share since the question was first polled in January of 2019. Club for Growth, a conservative group once allied with Donald Trump, circulated polls showing that Ron DeSantis had a healthy lead over the former president in Iowa and in New Hampshire, the first two states on the path to the GOP nomination, as well as in Florida and in Georgia. Christine Matthews, a pollster who has Republican clients, said, "The sense that primary voters are ready to look beyond Donald Trump is very real, driven by their belief that he is hobbled by his antagonistic relationship with the media. They're able to justify moving on from him by saying, the media will never give Donald Trump a fair shot. They'll always be against him. So even though we really like him and think his policies were great, it's probably time for someone new to take over."
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, consequences of cutting from family. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the consequences of cutting from the family. Now, when we talk about this relation, which is some people, they do cut from their family, there are some consequences. Why? Because cutting from family, generally known as qat'i rahim in the Arabic, which is the opposite of sila rahim. Sila rahim means like having a good relation with the family. Now, in this term that we have, rahim means womb. Now, generally, when we talk about the sila rahim, we explain that rahim, because it means the womb, so sila means having a connection, having a friendship with those who have a relation to you through the wombs. Obviously, it is about the brothers and the sisters. The brothers and sisters, they should have a good relation even when they grow, when they have kids, maybe they become the grandparents. They should not cut from each other. Unfortunately, the system of the life, we can see that it is in a way that, especially in the Western societies or the Western world, people are disconnecting from each other. The family members are disconnecting. Everyone is living his own life. Children, when they become 18 years old, they try to get separate from their parents. And when parents are old, they have to think about themselves, taking care of themselves by themselves, and maybe going to an old age house. And we see that there's no one to respect them. There is no one to basically go and see them. And this disconnection has the consequences. And Islam says it has the heavy consequences. If you do not want to have those consequences, then you need to build a relation with your family, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the consequences of cutting from family. Now, when we talk about the consequences of cutting from the family, obviously the very first thing is that the person's life becomes shorter. Now, those who do not have a good relation with their parents, with their brothers and sisters who have cut from the family, this cutting from the family is basically making their life shorter, and they become sick very soon or very consecutively. So therefore, these issues which they face is because they're away from their siblings. They're away from their brothers and sisters. They're away from their parents. On top of that, we know that the respect of parents is very important in the Islam, and Islam gives importance to the respect of the parents. Therefore, those who leave their parents on their own, obviously there are some consequences. When Allah has created us, He had made parents the means of our existence. We must respect our parents because of this relation that we have. At least we cannot be born, we couldn't be born without our parents. Therefore, when He made them our the one through which we came to this world, He made them our guardian, He made them our nurturer. Therefore, when they have done their duty to nurture us and they were our nurturer, now when we are grown up, it's our duty to take care of them when they're old, when they need us. It is not right to just send them to an old age house. Rather, we should take care of them the way we take care of our children. And don't say that they have done it because it was their duty. Islam is not like this. Islam says the way they took care of you, you must take care of them, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
In the limelight.
An Arctic blast that gripped much of the United States on Saturday, 24th of December, left more than 700,000 people without power, at least 16 dead from weather-related car crashes, and thousands stranded due to flight cancellations. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story. Millions of people have hunkered down to ride out the winter storm that has killed at least 34 people across the United States and is expected to claim more lives after trapping people inside houses and knocking out power lines to tens of thousands of homes and businesses in the United States. The scope of the storm has been on a rarely seen scale, stretching from Canada down to the Rio Grande along the border with Mexico. About 60% of the U.S. population faced some sort of winter weather advisory or warning, and temperatures plummeted drastically below normal levels from east of the Rocky Mountains to the Appalachian Mountains, the National Weather Service has confirmed. In some areas, being outdoors could lead to frostbite in a matter of minutes, the National Weather Service said in a bulletin. The service advised anyone traveling or going outside to prepare for extreme cold by dressing in layers, covering as much exposed areas of skin as possible, and pack winter safety kits in your vehicles. The storm has led to fatalities in several states, including Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, New York. As of Sunday, 25th of December, 60% of the U.S. population was under a weather warning. Across the border in Canada, authorities said a bus rolled over on an icy highway in British Columbia on Christmas Eve, killing 4 people and injuring 36 others. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police said on Sunday that the bus crashed on Highway 97C east of Merritt. The regional health authority said 36 people were treated for injuries ranging from minor to serious. 8 remained hospitalized on Christmas morning, including 2 in serious condition and 2 with non-life-threatening injuries. The winter storm also hit Ontario and Quebec in recent days, causing flight cancellations and school closures and knocking out power lines to hundreds of thousands of customers. In the United States, among the worst-hit localities was Buffalo, New York, where 2 days of heavy snow and high winds created conditions that local officials said were likely the most severe since 1977. Snowfalls were predicted to be 4 feet to 5 feet as of Sunday evening, drifting to 6 feet. 3 days into the blizzard, people remained stuck in cars on highways and streets, according to officials. At one point, every fire truck in the city was stranded, said the New York State Governor Kathy Hochul, while ambulances were averaging 3 hours per trip. It's like a Category 3 hurricane with a bunch of snow mixed in, said Tim Carney, chief of the local sheriff's office whose jurisdiction includes Buffalo. The county's executive, Mark Poloncarz, confirmed 7 fatalities by early Sunday. This is not the Christmas any of us hoped for nor expected, but try to have as merry a Christmas as possible today, he tweeted. The county's executive, Mark Poloncarz, added, remember the holiday spirit and why we're a community of good neighbors. Again, my deepest condolences to the families who have lost loved ones. The storm knocked out power lines in communities from Maine to Seattle. But heat and light were steadily being restored across the United States, according to PowerOutage.us. Fewer than 200,000 customers were without electricity on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, down from a peak of 1.7 million. The storm, which forecasters named Elliott, prompted the cancellation or delay of thousands of flights. There were 1,707 domestic and international flights cancelled on Sunday, 25th of December, according to tracking site FlightAware. In New York, about 34,000 households were still without electricity on Sunday, including 26,000 in Erie County, where utility crews and hundreds of National Guard troops battled high winds and struggled with getting stuck in the snow. Storm-related deaths were also reported in recent days all over the country. 12 in Erie County, New York, ranging in age from 26 to 93 years old, and another in Niagara County, where a 27-year-old man was overcome by carbon monoxide poisoning. 10 people died in Ohio, including an electrocuted utility worker and those killed in multiple car crashes. 6 motorists were killed in crashes in Missouri, Kansas, and Kentucky. A Vermont woman struck by a falling branch, an apparently homeless man found amid Colorado's sub-zero temperatures, and a woman who fell through Wisconsin River ice. USA Today has also covered the same story. A powerful winter storm kept pummeling the United States on Christmas Eve with dangerously cold temperatures and heavy snow, leaving in its wake fatal car crashes, thousands of cancelled flights, and millions of people at risk for future power outages. The massive footprint of the winter weather and its timing during a busy holiday travel week makes the Arctic blast particularly dangerous. The National Weather Service on Friday, 23rd of December, said its warnings and advisories cover about 200 million Americans, one of the greatest extents of winter weather warnings and advisories ever. Nationwide, officials have attributed at least 18 deaths to the massive winter storm. In Ohio, about 50 vehicles were involved in a pileup that killed at least 4 people. An 82-year-old woman was found dead outside of an assisted care facility in Michigan on Friday amid dangerously cold temperatures. And in the Buffalo, New York area, which received stunning records of rain and snowfall on Friday, 2 people died in their homes after emergency responders couldn't reach them amid the city's historic blizzard conditions. The winter weather's dangers are often localized and not limited to snowfall. In New York, blizzard conditions created whiteouts and stranded motorists on the state's western side, while flooding prompted water rescues on the eastern side. Meanwhile, bone-numbing wind chills extended throughout the country. Every state in the contiguous U.S. will experience minimum wind chills below freezing on Christmas or before Christmas, according to the Weather Service. Only a few regions in the U.S. are expected to escape bitter cold over Christmas. That's parts of California, Oregon, Arizona, and Florida are among the few spots in the nation that won't experience wind chills below freezing. Other impacts from the winter storm kept accumulating. On Saturday, 24th of December, power outage reports swelled up in some 1.7 million Saturday morning, before falling significantly in the afternoon, and thousands of flights were cancelled amid a busy holiday travel season. Severe weather across the country led to more than 20% of flights being cancelled on Friday. Impacts are continuing, but the FAA expects that the most extreme disruptions are behind us as airline and airport operations gradually recover. This, according to U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg. Buttigieg also noted that many Amtrak services have been cancelled or delayed as well. He cautioned those traveling by car this weekend to observe local warnings and weather warnings and weather hazards. Federal forecasters expect a huge mass of cold air to continue affecting the nation into next week. Those temperatures are a concern from the Dakotas to Florida, even on Monday and Tuesday. Wind chills will still bottom out in the 20s and low 30s on Monday and Tuesday morning for most locations in the south outside of South Florida, according to forecasters. But low temperatures are forecasters' primary concern for most of the country by Monday. Flooding, rain, and other hazards are also expected to affect more localized regions.
It's بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A few strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28th. 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. About 2 months later, both the new president and prime minister, Marty Rajai and Marty Bahonar, were martyred together in the middle of a meeting. Many of you may remember these things, but our dear young people did not see these things at that time. They do not have a correct awareness of the history and details of these events. Think about this, you dear young people, our dear children, about 2 months after those events. Marty Rajai and Marty Bahonar, the president and prime minister at the time, were assassinated in a meeting and were gone. Shortly afterwards, a number of senior commanders from the army and the guard corps were martyred in a plane crash. Martyr Fallahi, Martyr Fakuri, Martyr Kolahduz, and the like. So in less than 3 months' time, all these bitter events took place. All these terrible tragedies occurred. All these devastating blows struck us.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Which country do you know of? Which government do you know of that can stand up to all these events and not collapse? You, the judiciary, are part of such a system. The people stood firmly, Imam stood firmly, like Mount Damavand and the caring officials and the revolutionary youth stood firmly. They turned the situation around 180 degrees. They changed continuous defeat in the war into continuous victory. They cleared the munafiqeen from the streets. They helped the army and the IRGC to become more organized every day. And they returned the country to a normal situation. There is a point to pay attention to in this. When these events took place, whether it was the martyrdom of Marty Beheshti or in subsequent events, the enemies rejoiced. They were hopeful that the foundations of this revolutionary system were falling apart. But they were frustrated in this hope. They were frustrated that day. And this frustration and disappointment has been repeated for them many times during these 4 decades.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.